Hello once again, everybody. Thank you for joining me here on this Tuesday, November 26th edition of Bang the Book Radio. My name is Adam Burke, your host for the next hour or so. We're going over all kinds of things in the world of sports from a betting focus. Happy to have you with me as two guests. A couple of Brians joined me on the program here today. The first, Brian Blessing, the host of Sportsbook Radio and Vegas Hockey Hotline. We'll chat some NFL. We'll talk all three Thanksgiving games with you. Then we'll do some NHL stuff with a very condensed schedule here for this week. Second half of today's show, professional handicapper Brian Leonard from WagerTalk.com will join me. He takes the place of Ralph Michaels, who's going to join me on tomorrow's show. But with Brian Leonard here today, we'll talk about NBA and some betting around the holidays. We'll talk about college football as well as the NFL. Should be a great show for you here on today's program. Over at BangTheBook.com, we are your one-stop shop for sports betting news and information. Lots of great stuff going on over there. Again, very condensed weeks in both the NBA and the NHL. So my situational betting articles, very good resources for you over there right now. Also college basketball and college football situational betting articles to be for your reading pleasure over there. College football power ratings for week 14. Danny Vorgs put up his NFL model projections for the three Thanksgiving games. He'll have the rest of the week here on Thursday or Friday. So lots of good stuff going on over at bangthebook.com. Make sure you check it all out. Finally, as you know, this and every edition of Bang the Book Radio, presented by our friends over at DSI Sportsbook, BTB, and the number 200 is that promo code. 100% deposit match bonus for the Sportsbook, 100% deposit match bonus for the live casino at BetDSI. It's only a game until you bet it. Two guests on the program here today. We start with Brian Blessing, the host of Sportsbook Radio and Vegas Hockey Hotline. Brian, how's it going today, man?
It is going well, bud. How you been?
Doing well, buddy. Appreciate your time as always here, sir. And I guess we'll go ahead and dive right in with a look at the NFL. And, you know, as we like to do here on this segment, before we take a look ahead, we'll take a look back at what we saw here in week 12 of the NFL season. And what really stands out are the two primetime blowouts.
Well, Lamar Jackson, this is, you know, reaching a level of stupidity, how good he is. But the Rams are a dog's breakfast. It is amazing to me that, you know, teams, and we see it in all sports, you know, the teams have a great year and you think, okay, they've turned a corner and you're going to trend up and then all of a sudden fall off the map. So I guess the moral of the story, it's, you know, nothing's handed to you, you know. If you think you're so good and just show up and think it's going to work out for you, it's not. But the crazy thing about the Rams is, they have literally played, with the exception of the Tampa Bay game, which was ridiculous, they virtually played every game this year like they played the Super Bowl last year. I mean, whatever happened to them and whatever the Patriots did to them, I don't know if it was a blueprint or whatever, but the Rams are just a mess.
They are. They are most definitely a mess, and you kind of wonder, you know, when does this stop? And furthermore, too, we could start talking about this with the Rams. You're talking about a team that went to the Super Bowl, and they're not even going to make the playoffs this year in all likelihood. So what is their mindset the rest of the way here? You know, what do they look like this week against an Arizona team coming off of a bye that's been better than most of us expected? The look-ahead line was -4 or so with the Rams a road favorite. A lot of threes out there in the market. Now, you do wonder about the mindset of this team here as we go forward. And that is something we do need to consider here across a lot of these sports, you know, especially the ones that are kind of winding down a little bit, in particular college football and the NFL. But what is the mindset of some of these teams here as they go forward?
Well, no, I mean, it's a great point, because yesterday on a bunch of different shows, we were talking about, well, pending the result tonight, the game with Arizona, and you're seeing the reaction in relation to the number. Because the one thing you're getting with Arizona knows who they are. They're a team trying to build a foundation. And the one thing you get from Arizona is every game, they're competing. Now, the Rams basically had a win out, or darn close to it, but to be so non-competitive in that game, I don't know that I'd go anywhere near the game. And Goff is a mess. The whole thing's just a gong show with them. But I think it is telling in that we've talked on this podcast for a couple of years. The week-to-week number and the reaction to what you last witness is pretty compelling, because you've never seen 3-4 point swings you know, in an NFL game ever based on a previous result. But that's the norm now.
Yeah, it is. It's a very reactionary sport, to say the least. And, you know, it's difficult because you've got a lot of teams that are just very inconsistent here this season. You've got some very good. You've got some very bad. You've got some very inconsistent in the middle. Speaking of one of those inconsistent teams, you know, I swore up and down. I told myself many times over, I will not back Jameis Winston again this season. And I talked about this game last week, Tampa Bay and Atlanta, saying, look, I mean, this is an overreaction to what Atlanta's done the last 2 weeks, being a 4-point favorite here in this spot. I couldn't get myself to back Jameis Winston, and it was one of the easiest covers of the week to take Tampa Bay. I couldn't get myself to bet against New England again. Dallas winds up coming through in that one. It's almost like persistence pays off in the NFL, no matter how hard it is to make that play.
No, Winston, the one thing he can do is go up and down the field. The thing you don't know is when does the, you know, handful of box of rocks throws comes that are like instant potatoes that produce points the other way. So, you know, their defense looked good. He protected the football. They won for fun. The crazy thing is you can't trust Tampa Bay, but Jacksonville, I'm watching that game with Tennessee, Adam, and it's amazing. There was a lot of talent on this team, but it's a dysfunctional mess. Marone's toast on a stick now. I think these guys have run for the bus. And you're watching the Tennessee game. Oh, yeah, you think he'd have learned something. Last year, Fournette ran off the bench, ran across the sidelines to get in a fight. Game was played in Buffalo, and he got kicked out. And he comes off the sidelines last week, and they're pushing and shoving after the whistle. And, you know, he was an inch away from getting thrown out again. Jacksonville's just a disaster. So you look at the impact of that number based on the last result. And what do they end up doing now? The Foles thing certainly isn't working out.
Yeah, and now you're kind of wondering, you know, with bringing in Nick Foles, you know, Gardner Minshew playing pretty well, you kind of tied yourself to Nick Foles for a while, and maybe Minshew's the better guy. So, again, at this time of the year in the NFL, these are things you have to start thinking about because, you know, some of these teams that had expectations falling well short of them, and yeah, they're professionals, they're playing for a paycheck, they're playing for, you know, free agent money in the offseason, so on and so forth. But you do have some lame duck head coaches now. You do have some teams that just aren't going to show up to the degree that you need them to in order to cover some of these numbers. So very much something you want to factor into the equation for the rest of the year here. Brian, let's start with this early Thursday game, Chicago and Detroit. And, you know, it's a good thing this one's not happening while everyone's eating because it could make everybody sick on Thursday. Seems like Jeff Driscoll now banged up for Detroit. Matt Stafford not going to play. They were talking about trying to re-sign Josh Johnson again. It's a mess there for the Lions. And really, I think it's more of a mess than we've been led to believe because last week's performance against Washington was pretty poor from them. Chicago now a 2.5 or 3-point road favorite.
Yeah, I mean, we got to talk about it, right? I mean, but it would probably be Chicago or nothing for me. I mean, the Detroit loss to the Redskins basically – that was a kick return, you know? I mean, so I would watch this game and apply it to the Washington-Carolina game. I think if Detroit is moderately competitive, if Detroit wins this game, I mean, you go broke laying double digits in the NFL, but, you know, Carolina, it was a punch to the gut. I mean, watch, see how I bounced away from the Chicago-Detroit game? But I'm going to use the Chicago-Detroit game. I think Haskins has lost. And you put Haskins on the road against Carolina. If they don't pout off the hard-fought loss to New Orleans, I think Carolina rolls the Redskins. So I want to see an ounce of respectability from Detroit to enhance my opinion on the Washington-Carolina game because I got nothing on Chicago-Detroit.
No, that's perfect.
Probably the under, you know, but I'm not going anywhere near it.
No, I mean, that's perfectly fair. I mean, I guess you could say, you know, when you look at the first meeting between Detroit and Chicago, that was the game where Driscoll was announced the starter on game day. Obviously, the team had more of an idea than any of us did, but the Stafford news came out on Saturday, of course, after I had already put in my super contest pick on Detroit. But then Driscoll starts, and Detroit very easily could have won that first meeting against Chicago. I think here, if anything, I'm teasing Detroit up. That's probably the play that I would make here, would be to tease Detroit up through 3-7, and then pair it with something like Tennessee later on this week, although that's a total that's kind of on the rise there. Maybe teasing Denver up through 8.5, maybe teasing Pittsburgh up through 8.5, something like that. I think you could go with a teaser option here for Chicago and Detroit if you feel like you have to play the game. Otherwise, like you said, there are definitely better options out there for this week and even on Thursday.
Yeah, I would recommend to people, if you're a $50 bettor and you were going to bet $50 on this game, take the $50 and go play horses for 3 hours. And then, you know, then let's get on to the other games.
I mean,
it doesn't mean because it's a crummy game. If you got a firm opinion, like I said, I'd probably lean, I guess, Chicago's way. But, you know, Chicago laying points against anybody's a terrifying prospect, too.
It is, and Detroit's got a bunch of injuries on the defensive line, too, so that's something you want to pay attention to. It's not just Driscoll this week and the quarterback position. It's a lot of stuff on defense, too. But also, if you're a $50 bettor, Black Friday, go find a good deal. It's probably going to give you more enjoyment than betting that Chicago and Detroit game.
Or take your $50 and pick a player out of the game. You find a player prop, you know, do Taylor Gabriel over 67.5 receiving yards. You can probably trust that more than you can the game.
All right. Well, we got two other games to talk about here on Thanksgiving, at least. That'll be our saving grace here for today. Game 307-308, Buffalo and Dallas. Dallas, 6.5, 7-point favorite, predominantly 6.5 out there in the marketplace here for this one. Total of 45.5. What do you think about this one here, Brian?
Well, it would be an intangible thing that's going to make the difference for me. You know, short week, traveling, playing Dallas off a loss. You would think it's a tough spot for the Bills. And people shoot holes at, their 8-3 record and who they've played. Well, you know, let's cut to the chase here. Dallas is 0-4 against teams with winning records. So they've not stepped up to the plate. The irony is both Buffalo and Dallas played New England tough, and both Buffalo and Dallas lost because of a blocked punt in that game. Those games were so eerily similar, it was ridiculous. The one thing I would say, if the Cowboys run the football, because here's what Buffalo's doing that nobody really kind of identifies, I don't believe. It's very similar to what the Patriots defense is, as terrific as the Patriots defense is, and what Belichick does is he takes your best player away. But basically now Belichick's taking your two best options away because they've got Stephon Gilmore out on an island that basically is going to take the best wide receiver. Last week it was Cooper. You know, a guy like Cooper is going to make a play or two, but he's going to mitigate the big play. The Bills do the exact same thing with Trey White, who does not get anywhere near enough recognition. The kid should have made the Pro Bowl last year. He is a lockdown corner. He shut down Beckham when he played him. I think it's a great matchup with Trey White and Cooper. Cooper will get a little, I think, but not a lot. And then the Bills' safeties are spectacular. And if the Cowboys run the football, Elliott gets 150 yards, they're winning this game. But the Bills' offense is starting to show signs of life. They're starting to implement Singletary a little bit more. John Brown is having a Pro Bowl season for the Bills at wide receiver. And look for Cole Beasley to be a big part of the game plan here going back against the Cowboys. And he helps the Bills move the chains. So at the end of the day, we're talking a touchdown. Some places it's 6.5. The intangible thing for me, Adam, is, and I think it matters not only to the Bills, it would matter to any team, but the Bills aren't on Sunday Night Football. The Bills aren't on Monday Night Football. This is their day in the spotlight, the only day. Now, they moved the New England game at the end of the year to a Saturday. So, all right, maybe, you know, that there's a little glimmer of hope for that. But for guys like that that feel disrespected and nobody gets to see them play, you know, they're making their case to make the Pro Bowl and things like that. I think the fact that this is a big spotlight game for the Bills, I think individually is going to fire up a lot of guys, and I think could be ultimately be the thing that makes them really live in this spot. And I think Josh Allen's doing a good job protecting the football. And, oh, by the way, you know, the game against Denver was played in 40-mile-an-hour winds. I mean, he was phenomenal. It's Miami, but the weather is good in Miami. He's been playing in just really adverse conditions the last month. Now it's going to be pristine conditions, so I would look for Allen's accuracy to be a lot better this week. I think it's an interesting game. It would be the Bills for me.
Yeah, it's Bills or nothing for me here, too. I mean, I don't trust Jason Garrett with 2 weeks to prepare for an opponent, let alone, you know, essentially 3 days. I mean, you know, this is one of those scenarios, too. And this was something that I heard on another podcast, and I don't want to, you know, misrepresent what they were saying. But one of the things they were talking about is that, you know, Dallas has done very well within the division. Jason Garrett plays well against teams that he sees all the time. Jason Garrett does not play well when he goes outside the division. And certainly not when he goes outside the conference. That's the case here for Dallas in this game. So I don't really anticipate Dallas having a very good game plan in this one. And that in and of itself kind of makes Buffalo pretty attractive. Obviously wish you could have gotten 7. There's a couple of them still out there, very heavily juiced. Maybe one comes back at some of the more publicly tuned shops. But I think that keeps Buffalo close in this game, is that Jason Garrett is a disaster waiting to happen. And, you know, Buffalo's coaching staff, while not great by any means, I think they're at least average, and that's certainly an upgrade over Garrett.
I saw this morning. The Bills are the number one team in the NFL against the spread. Dallas is also in the top 5 or 10. So that's an interesting thing a little bit. But everybody shoots holes at the AFC East that it's hot, you know, it's hot garbage, it's New England and everybody else. But the AFC East, these teams, when they go out of the division, they got winning records. I mean, New England, the Bills, and the Jets are doing quite well when they go out of the division.
Yeah, and again, I mean, it's just a big number, too. You know, I mean, this is a pretty big number for a short week, and I understand Buffalo's got to do the travel, but also Dallas coming back off of playing in New England, you know, obviously you're not going to do too much on Monday. I mean, they're almost on equal footing because Dallas had to come back off a big game.
I said this before for a Thursday game. I forget which one it was, but if you think about it, you know, okay, travel's involved here. But what would actually be easier? Bills play Denver by, 5 o'clock Sunday afternoon. The Bills are out of the stadium. They're home. They're in their own bed. They go out, celebrate the win, blah, 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 blah. Come back to work Monday morning. You get to work, blah, blah, blah. And then, okay, Wednesday, hop on a plane and go. But the Patriots play the late game on a Sunday, and then they got to fly home. They're getting home at, like, whatever, probably 11 o'clock at night or, on Sunday night, and then they probably went out and celebrated their win a little bit. At the end of the day, the travel, I think it's easier for Buffalo to go to Dallas on Wednesday than it was for New England or Dallas to go home from New England on Sunday. I think the travel's a wash.
I think so, too. One more game here on Thursday, 309-310, New Orleans and Atlanta. New Orleans looking to exact a little bit of revenge. They lost badly to Atlanta coming off the bye. I did talk about that game, though, and I will elaborate on that a little bit more here as I break down this one. But New Orleans, 6.5, 7-point favorite here on the road against a Falcons team that kind of went back to looking like what we saw them look like early on in the year. Total here of 48.5.
Well, the one thing we know is New Orleans ain't going to be taking these guys lightly after the thumping they took a few weeks ago. So there's certainly motivation on New Orleans' side of the equation. The Atlanta thing was just confounding. I mean, they were a no-show after, like, boy, everybody's giving them full marks. Okay, they regrouped after the bye. They're a different team, and their defense was flying around. Well, the defense was a no-show, and, Ryan was running for his life in that game. Listen, anytime New Orleans, Atlanta, indoors are playing, I'm looking over the total. I don't know. Part of me wants to say, okay, it's a bad day, and we just saw Atlanta match up really well against these guys, and they're a home dog catching 7. I probably like Atlanta in the over, to be honest with you.
Well, and when you look back to that game a couple of weeks ago, first of all, New Orleans was a 14-point home favorite. So we have seen a little bit of an adjustment to this number. Open 6.5, flip home field, it's 12.5. So a little bit of an adjustment from that result that we saw. But in that game, New Orleans gifted Atlanta 5 first downs via penalty, 4 of them on third down to extend drives. New Orleans got to midfield, turned it over on downs, punted it away. They had some inopportune or, some poorly timed turnovers. It wasn't as bad of a look as the final score would suggest. Yeah, it is when you talk about the two teams, but the way the game played out, New Orleans just had some untimely penalties and got stopped around midfield a few too many times. So clean up the penalties, get some of those conversions. This game could look very, very different. Again, it's a scary thing laying a touchdown on the road short week, given the situation from what these two teams just had 2 weeks ago. I actually like New Orleans here. I think New Orleans can get this blowout win, and it'll set them up well for the remainder of the schedule.
Yeah, I mean, it was 26-9. You know, and Atlanta did their part offensively in that game. So I think at home, whatever, Atlanta, you know, will do their part. If they get it into the, 21-24 point range. But if New Orleans comes back with a sense of purpose and does their part offensively, and normally you would see this game, I think, Adam, you'd see the total 51.5, 52, something along those lines. But they basically go, everybody's going to go back and look and say, oh, the first game was 26-9. So I think the total's deflated. So I like the over better than the side, but I do like the game to go over.
And one other thing I'll throw out there, the Saints got by against Tampa Bay the first time around without Marshawn Lattimore. In last week's game, they missed Marshawn Lattimore badly. And he may not play here with the short week, the hamstring injury. They're not going to rush him because of where they're currently sitting in the standings. If they don't have him, that adds a little bit more fuel to the fire for the over, because that is a player that they very much miss when he's not out there. And obviously, we know Matt Ryan can sling it around a little bit. So that's another angle I'm kind of looking at here, too, is that if Lattimore doesn't go, I like the over more.
And here's the thing, how that one guy would impact. What do? We just started talking about Stephon Gilmore in New England and Trey White in Buffalo. If Lattimore is not there, then that probably means now you're going to have to double up on Julio Jones, or basically go to a lot more zone, and then the underneath stuff becomes open, which should set up a guy like Ridley potentially to have a really big day. I mean, because one guy's and a guy like that, the impact he has just has tentacles all over the defense.
All right, so we transition over to the NHL here, and we've got three games on the schedule tonight, but we've got 13 on Wednesday, 12 on Friday, 13 on Saturday. 17 teams playing three games in 4 days, Wednesday, Friday, Saturday. 11 teams playing four games in 6 days, Monday, Wednesday, Friday, Saturday. So, they give the league just about a full day off on Thursday. There's one game, New Jersey and Montreal. Then all of a sudden they screw everybody else over by having to play a bunch of games in a condensed period of time around the holiday. A lot of situational spots here across the board this week.
Well, right out of the gate, just blindly with what you just said, backup goalies are going to be popping up all over the place. And the question is, and I think more Friday, Saturday, as we get later in the week, but the backups could be playing on Friday with the starter on the back end, or, the starter plays the first day and then the backup on the back end. So do your homework here and find out who the goalies are going to be or what the goalie rotation is. And you can pretty much of your own accord assume if one goalie's playing tonight, the odds are the next night across the league, I think you're going to see a boatload of backups play. So therein lies the opportunity from a total perspective, because I will say this, I think the odds makers have done a lot more work and are much better than they've ever been in terms of hanging NHL numbers, but by a country mile, it remains the best sport to bet. You get a backup goalie goes in, total on a game is six, and word comes out a backup's going to play. They don't even make the total six over 20. I mean, they don't even adjust, the juice attached to the spread. So that's the one thing. I don't think the odds makers are taking the backups into account. So I do think there's going to be some really good total opportunities heading into the weekend.
Now, what about the fact that all of this comes around a holiday? Now, of course, most of these players are Canadian or European or something like that. So American Thanksgiving doesn't matter nearly as much to them. But nine games last night, eight home teams wind up with the win. Maybe it's just coincidence. Maybe it's something more. Does that factor into the equation at all for you? Teams that have to travel and be away from their families here for these holidays?
In some respects, I always I always like the road team in the holiday games. I mean, they're not pouting. I guess they, some can, but the bottom line is, all right, hey, we're stuck here. You know, we got to do this, and we're going to celebrate Thanksgiving tomorrow when we get home. And, you know, the home team sitting there, you know, going home to Thanksgiving dinner or in the NBA on Christmas Day. You know, I always like the road team. Say, hey, listen, man, we're here. Why the hell not? Let's do something about it. Make it a business trip. I'm always looking to play the road teams on the holiday.
No, I think that's fair. I think it's a fair way of looking at it. You know, you talk about, you know, if you've got the Wednesday, Friday road games, which I think there's five teams in the NBA that have that. I'm not sure how many in the NHL. You wind up going on a team dinner. You know, you wind up being together with the boys. You FaceTime your family and, you know, you're together with the boys. And, you know, those are things that can really help teams, especially some teams that, you know, maybe kind of having a little bit of a rough go of it. So I think that you're definitely onto something there. But again, I mean, you know, we talk about leading up to the Christmas break, especially here at Thanksgiving. Situational handicapping in the NHL, always a powerful tool. But like you mentioned here, so much of it this week, the backup goaltenders, fatigued teams, you know, you got some long road trips for some of these teams.
A lot of injuries.
Yeah, and that too. And do you feel like injuries are properly accounted for in the NHL betting market?
No. No. And, I mean, you know, if a name guy's out, I mean, obviously Crosby, you know, Crosby's worth, you know, whatever to the wagering line. Is he more than 40 cents? I mean, you know, a guy like that. But beyond that, I would say no, Adam. But depending who the guy is, you know, it's remarkable because one guy's absence, just like we were talking about with Lattimore. But if some guy who's a real solid, even the third line center, okay, and he's out, the impact that has throughout the lineup, because A, maybe he's their best penalty killer, and it messes up the whole rotation, and you know, other guys' ice time is impacted by a guy's absence. So and we're speaking very much in generalities right now, but just because he's not a superstar doesn't mean that there aren't key guys that in various facets of the game have a massive impact because it upsets the rotation of the whole apple cart.
Yeah, and also, too, you talk about a third-line center. I mean, maybe that's your matchup guy against the other team's top line.
Exactly. But he's not a named guy.
Right.
You know, and if your third-line center is the guy who's going to be the one who's out there, you know, shadowing a McDavid or pick a guy, but he's not out there, I mean, the other team's first line improves leaps and bounds. Or because that third-line guy's absence is out there, then the coach may have to tinker and he says, let's go for it. You know, we know we can't defend him the way we normally defend him. Maybe our best defense is a good offense. And for that one game, because the third line center is not there, they're going to say our best defense is a good offense. They can't score if they don't have the puck. So let's go for it. And all of a sudden, a team that would normally play a sit-back, counterpunch kind of game, because that third line guy out who doesn't have any value in the wagering line, completely changes the way the whole game is played in terms of pace, and the game's a dead over because that guy's out, but nobody even knows he's out.
Yeah, it's definitely the case here in the NHL. Again, you got to pay a lot of attention to the details, I think, in the NHL hockey market, perhaps more so than any other sport, just because, again, not as many household names or known commodities or anything like that. What about tonight's card, Brian? Three games on the board, Minnesota, New Jersey, Wild in a back-to-back off last night's loss to the Rangers. Boston, Montreal, Dallas, and Chicago. Dallas back-to-back with travel off beating Vegas last night. Anything stand out to you about tonight's card?
Boston, Montreal, they get after it. They hate each other. It's always fun to watch. You know, slightly into Boston. Montreal's maybe wobbling a little bit, but they compete hard. They're a fun team to watch. That's going to be a fun game. The one I'd step up to the plate and play is Minnesota and Jersey over. Minnesota quietly has turned into an over team, and they're getting some offense, and they've righted the ship a little bit. So I do like the over six. I thought that total should have been 6.5. And then you got Dallas is at Chicago, and having played back-to-back nights, you know, having to fly to Chicago to play, and you'd normally say, oh, big advantage Chicago. But Dallas is on a heater right now. Dallas is playing spectacular hockey. They are feeling their oats right now. And I would envision, let me real quick, bear with me. Bishop played last night. and they beat Vegas 4-2. I would think you might get the backup tonight. Yes, you will. Hubotin is going to play, but you know what? It's not been that big a drop-off. Hubotin is 6-3-1 with a save percentage of .929, goals against the .215. He's been playing good. Chicago, of late, what they're doing is playing a different style. They're putting a forward high in the defensive zone, which gives them an outlet, and they're creating a lot of three-on-two and odd-man rushes the other way. But by doing that, if you play against a team that's good on the cycle, they're getting pinned in their own end a lot, and that's kind of playing right into Dallas's hands. So, you know, who's going to dictate the way the game's played is really the order of the day in this one. And that's a pretty interesting chess match.
One final thing I want to ask you about here with regards to the NHL. A lot of day games on Friday, a couple of day games on Saturday as well. So you got some teams playing, some uncharacteristically early games, especially with that Friday slate. Toronto and Buffalo play a back-to-back home-to-home. There are a couple of home-and-homes here Friday and Saturday. I believe there's another one Saturday, Sunday. Vancouver and Edmonton, with Vancouver coming off of a long road trip to host Edmonton on Sunday. But Buffalo and Toronto, back-to-back, home-and-home. These two teams hate each other. But Toronto seems to have a little bit of extra spring in its step now that they got rid of Mike Babcock.
Yeah, and they'll get that short-term bump out of this. But the Toronto, they're still really flawed in their own end of the rink. And you know, Buffalo is just, they've driven off a cliff here. And I want to see the response. The game on Wednesday night will tell me a lot more about this one. Buffalo's back home playing Calgary. In many respects, they outplayed Boston and lost the game. They beat Florida and were outplaying Tampa for a long stretch of the game. And then Dahlin got elbowed in the face and suffered a concussion while carrying the puck, and there was no call. So they got scalded by the refs, but more than anything, they scalded themselves because not one guy on that team did anything to react. And then they gave up two shorthanded goals on a power play. If they don't respond with a good effort against Calgary, this team's in, you know, spiraling out of control. But the day games in Buffalo, for whatever reason, I don't know what it is. The Sabres always play well in afternoon games. And the building will be electric because, you know, almost half the building's going to be Toronto fans. That should be a game, I believe, that goes over the total. Usually the Toronto-Buffalo series, they're higher scoring games in Buffalo and lower scoring in Toronto. So that's a general rule of thumb.
Brian Blessing, the host of Sportsbook Radio and Vegas Hockey Hotline. How can people check out those two shows, Brian?
Adam, noon to 2 Pacific time. Noon, we get Sportsbook Radio. And we get the top sportsbook directors in Vegas. We love doing that show. We've been doing it for more than a decade. And then Vegas Hockey Hotline's 1 to 2 p.m. I do it with our pal Stevie Slapshot. We get great guests from around the NHL. And you can listen to the shows live, kshp.com. There's a listen live function. And follow me on Twitter, Brian Blessing. I tweet the links to the shows out for you as well. And we do videos for you, my friend. We're going to, you know, focus on, we got a Bills Cowboys video up there, but I think we're going to focus on some of the games coming up on the weekend. The Minnesota Seattle game to me is a pretty compelling game, I think, that provides an opportunity. That's a game we're going to talk about.
Brian Blessing, again, the host of Sportsbook Radio and Vegas Hockey Hotline, kshp.com, at Brian Blessing on Twitter. Brian, we appreciate your time as always, man. Thank you so much for joining me, and happy Thanksgiving to you and yours, sir.
Yeah, bud. Happy Thanksgiving to you and your family. I know usually you come strutting out this way, so bundle up, sit down, put sweatpants on, eat, and watch football. It's not rocket science.
Absolutely. There you go. Once again, there's Brian Blessing of Sportsbook Radio and Vegas Hockey Hotline, at Brian Blessing on Twitter. All right, from one Brian to another, we got one more guest here on today's program. That is professional handicapper Brian Leonard from WagerTalk.com. Brian, how's it going today, man?
Everything's going well, and I believe I'm the only one that spells my name correctly.
Yes, that's true, Brian, with a Y. And, of course, you know, everyone's going to be thrown off here doing your segment on Tuesday instead of Wednesday, swapping with Ralph Michaels, who's doing a lot of stuff here for those early season college basketball tournaments. So very much appreciate you guys setting that up for me, and very much appreciate you hopping on this Wednesday show here. And it's a very busy time of year with everything that we're covering, but also we throw a holiday into the mix here for this week. And I want to ask you about that, Brian. You know, we've got 28 teams in action on Wednesday in the NBA. So 14 games before the Thanksgiving holiday, 13 games on Black Friday, right after the holiday, league-wide day off on Thursday, but you know, you got a time crunch, you got family obligations, you got holidays, all kinds of other bullshit going on. What are some of the tricks that you use to maybe narrow your focus when you've got, say, a 14 or a 13 game card in the NBA?
Yeah, what I try to do is give a little bit of an edge to the road team because they're not doing any of the preparations or bringing in family for the holidays, that kind of thing. The teams are going to be home on Thanksgiving weekend or whatever. They've got more to worry about. I don't know if it's as big for some families as others, but you know, there's certain families out there that it's huge when they get together for the holidays. And those are the ones that I think it affects it a little bit more. If you're on the road, you don't have to worry about it as much and you're away from all that. So I think the home court is a little bit lesser around the holidays is it normally would be.
Yeah, and I think when I did my situational article for the NBA over at bangthebook.com, I believe five teams play on the road Wednesday and Friday. So you got 25 teams that are home for at least some part of the Thanksgiving holiday, whether they're traveling back in Wednesday night or they're traveling out Thursday night for a Friday game. So for the most part, the NBA tried to do what they could to accommodate a lot of these teams, but the five that play road games both Wednesday and Friday, maybe teams that you do want to take a look at. And it may be a little bit counterintuitive because some people may look at it and say, oh, well, these guys have to be away from their families. They'd rather be home with their wives and children. But you know what? Being out on the road, like you said, a lot less hassle because then you're just with the team and you know doing whatever the team's doing out on the road.
Yeah. If you know, I try to put myself in the position of the players. I think it's a relief to not be home during the holidays with a lot of the stuff that happens to normal families. So I'd prefer to be on the road, to be totally honest with you, if I was a player.
So in terms of the rest of the NBA here, we got only a couple of games tonight, very small slate, because as I mentioned, 14 games coming up tomorrow night. We had a big card on Monday night as well. So a lot of teams playing 4-6, 3-5 with the Thanksgiving holiday, which for some people really won't be much of a day off. Any thoughts on the Tuesday night games tonight if you don't have premium selections out for your clients on them?
No, as of now, I haven't done anything for today's action. Dallas right now is playing terrific ball. They're just been amazing.
How good is Doncic, man?
He's just terrific. I did a show yesterday, and I said, I don't remember a player since LeBron James when he was young that it was appointment television whenever you could watch him play. And Doncic is like that. I've watched every game I can that he's on the court, and he's just, you know, people like to say that a player makes his teammates better. You can see it when he plays how much better his teammates are. And I don't know what kind of drop off it'll be, you know, if he gets injured, what the lines will be if he sits out, but it'll be really interesting to see if they can make that high enough where the drop off is. Because I think the drop-off is huge between him being in the game and he being on the sideline. So we'll have to see how that goes.
Well, and one thing that is worth pointing out here is that I haven't seen anything. Maybe you've seen something more definitive, but we know that Kawhi Leonard doesn't play back-to-backs. Certainly looks like he's going to play tonight because tomorrow the Clippers play Memphis. So we should get a full Clippers complement tonight. Tomorrow night, I don't know if anybody's going to play for the Clippers. It wouldn't shock me at all if George sits, if Leonard sits. You know, if you find somebody that's asleep at the wheel and posts a Memphis overnight line, maybe want to grab it because that one's probably going to be on the move down.
It very well could be, and that's the guessing game we have, especially early in the day as to who's going to play, which, you know, the NBA has never been a sport that a lot of people get rich off of. It's sort of like the NFL, you kind of try to grind out a profit in it because the information is so far out there and the lines are so tight. And, you know, now having to worry about who's going to play and who's not makes it even harder for somebody to make a living betting on the NBA.
Well, we've got everybody in the league here. It's played really anywhere from about 16 to 18 games or so. The Wizards have only played 14. They've got a little bit of a busy schedule here the rest of the week. But, Brian, we got roughly 20 or so data points, 15 to 20 data points on a lot of these teams here. Anything really stand out to you as a great surprise, a team that maybe you're looking to continue to play on, a team maybe you're looking for some regression from that you want to fade, anything like that?
Yeah, there's a few teams. We're just talking about one of them being Dallas. Dallas lately is starting to put it all together, playing their best ball of the season. A team that I didn't expect a whole lot out of. I thought, they'd be a decent team, but I didn't expect them to play the way they have. And they're really coming on as of late. The Miami Heat are another team that I didn't expect a whole lot of, and I've been pretty impressed out of Miami. Golden State's a team that seems to play a good game every two or three and then has the ability to be blown out better, more blown out, if that's a word, blown out more often than any other team in the NBA. Atlanta's a team that I think has some talent, but they, other than the beginning of the season where, you know, their best player was going off, they've been a disappointment. Yeah, there's certain teams that I think are a little bit better than what they've shown, but a lot of this you could take a look at. For example, like yesterday I played Philadelphia against Toronto, and Philadelphia, both teams have been the type of teams that have been able to tread water during the game and then come on in the fourth quarter and play a good fourth quarter. And since Philadelphia had the better players, than Toronto, I thought Philadelphia, as long as they're in that game, they're going to come out and win it. And they had led that game by about seven with a few minutes to go. And then just the opposite happened. They fell apart, and Toronto gets the victory. In fact, Embiid doesn't even score a point for the first time in his career. So, it's a little bit tough, but there's certain teams that I think are starting to rise. The cream is rising to the top a little bit. And unfortunately, Dallas was the team I was looking to play, but they've been blowing everybody away. So now I don't think I'm going to get the advantage as if they were winning by one or two points.
One last thing to ask you about here in the NBA, then we'll transition over to the gridiron, is that, you know, you and I are both big-time baseball guys. And for baseball, for handicapping it the way that you and I do, generally tends to require a pretty good sample size. And you and I, you know, don't want to fall victim to those small sample sizes that are out there. But I've talked about this before, and I don't want to call it a revelation per se, but something I have noticed in both the NBA and the NHL, teams get very streaky. You know, they'll play really well for a long period of time, then they'll lose two or three in a row, pick it back up, win a bunch of games in a row again. Looking at the standings right now, Milwaukee's won eight in a row, Toronto four in a row, Pacers three in a row, Nets four in a row. And then in the East, you've got losing streaks of three for the Magic, five for the Hornets, seven for the Hawks. Over in the West, the top four teams all on five or more game winning streaks right now. The bottom teams, Grizzlies have dropped four in a row. Warriors have dropped three in a row. Rockets have also lost three in a row. I feel like in the NBA, you can get some good opportunities just playing on streaks, because whether it's a confidence thing or a momentum thing or just everything's kind of clicking, feels like you kind of want to hop on some of those here and just kind of ride them out until they end.
Yeah, just let's take our hometown Cleveland Cavaliers, for example. They played terrible until they played up against Boston just a couple of weeks ago. And in that game, they played Boston pretty well, but they came up short. And after the game, the head coach, Beilein, said, he goes, the way Boston moves the ball around, that's the way we will move the ball around. And then I heard some quotes from some of the players saying, now we see it in person. Now we see what it can do. And like for the next five or six games, the Cavs played that way, and they were great. Then all of a sudden, now they're back to the way they've been playing before, which tells me that maybe the other teams have seen what Cleveland was doing. They go, hey, maybe we need to scout this team a little bit more, and they found the weakness. So now it comes back to Cleveland and the veteran college coach in Beilein to try to get the team back to the way they were playing before, maybe find a different strategy. But it's sort of a chess game where you will see these weaker teams get off to a nice little run every once in a while, or the better team is slumping, and then all of a sudden a few games go by, then they say, okay, well, there's something wrong here, or this team is doing something different. Let's go back and let's take a look at them again, and teams make adjustments. It's sort of like we talked baseball. Hitters can sometimes they get up there and they're hitting 700 for a week or two, and they're just seeing everything as clear as day. Then there's other times where they go on an 0-30 streak where they just can't see the ball at all. I think a lot of it is a mental thing. And, you know, for myself, I've been on a losing streak for my handicapping, and I get a little bit tentative. I've always been one to press it when I'm winning and pull back when I'm losing. So overall, I don't get too many losing streaks. But, you know, at this point, games that would fly off the page with me a month ago are ones that I'm really struggling with right now.
All right, well, with that, we transition over to the college football side of things, and I think we're all very happy to put Maction to bed tonight because it has been deplorable to watch, to say the least. Akron, a 4-touchdown home dog as they try to avoid going 0-12, which they're probably not going to do. Western Michigan bet up to 9.5 before coming back a little bit here against Northern Illinois. Western Michigan, a lot to play for. Northern Illinois, nothing to play for. So kind of a microcosm of the MAC here with these two games tonight. Any thoughts from you? Any leans one way or another?
No, not really. Don't know if I could trust Ohio in a, you know, a season where they've just underperformed all season long. But I know that I just cannot trust Akron. And, you know, a lot of people look at that game last week and think, man, they were just a few plays away. And if the Akron players just come into that and, you know, get some confidence out of it, maybe they could compete here. But I just don't see it. If I'm 0-11 and I'm a 4-touchdown underdog at home, I don't see much. You know, obviously you want to finish the season with a win, but you got to be realistic. And the other game is Northern Illinois has been a major disappointment, a team that's been going to bowls for as long as I remember, just having a lousy year for themselves. So it's a motivational thing. And you would think, you know, these teams get to play on national television in front of the nation, they would give their best. But, you know, when you take a look at the power ratings by conference, or the MAC is like 4 points lower than any other conference. And it used to be they were equal with the Sun Belt. Now the Sun Belt has exceeded them. The MAC right now, I hate to say it, should be dropping down to the FBS level because they're just not the same in football as they've been in the past. And they were never great.
No, they weren't. But at least our Zips basketball team looks okay. And the soccer team's always good. So we got
soccer,
that, right?
Won the national championship a few years ago. So, yeah, it's just football. I just don't think they can recruit in football the way they can in other sports.
And baseball back with manager, former Reds third baseman Chris Sabo. So, hey, maybe something will start looking up for the athletic department here at some point in you know, some of the bigger sports. But in any event, we look at Friday here. We start with game 321-322, Texas Tech and Texas. And this one's up a little bit from 9 to 10, just about market wide out there with the Longhorns getting a little bit of love in this one. Brian, do you agree with the line move here?
Not at all. I don't understand it. Texas Tech's a team that's not going to be going bowling this year. They were 0-4 in games decided by, you know, a touchdown or less. Last week, lose by 3 to Kansas State. Week before, lose by 2 to TCU. 2 weeks before that, lose to 3 to Kansas. This is a team lost by 3 at Baylor. They are much better than what their record shows. Texas is a team I faded all season long. Now, after losing last week to Baylor, now they've got a bowl game, you know, this, so their season will continue on. I really don't see a lot of reason for Texas to come to this game where, from my perspective, this is the bowl game for Texas Tech. They're a better team than what they've shown. My power ratings are showing that basically Texas is 4 points better. If you give them the full home field, it still comes up about 2.5 to 3 points too high here. And the motivational factor for Texas Tech, I love the Red Raiders here. I think this is one of the best bets on the board this week.
Yeah, I got this line 8 myself, so I disagree with the line move here in this one. And I like what you said, and this is a very important thing here. You know, some of the 4-7 teams out there, or 3-8, whatever the case may be, some of those teams may mail it in this week. But when you've got a game against a rival, this is almost a little brother, big brother type of game where, yeah, these two teams are in the same conference, but you're playing Texas. I mean, growing up, that was, if you live in Texas, that's where you want to play. And this game has a lot of recruiting implications to it, too. So, yeah, these 4-7 teams, they may not be going to a bowl game, but this week may be their bowl game. I think it's an excellent point that, you know, you don't hear too many people talking about.
Yeah, it's a situation for me. Like I said, I try to put myself in the position of the players, and really I can't see a reason why Texas would take this any more seriously than any other game they played this season.
All right, so we stay on Friday here. We go to game 337-338, Boise State and Colorado State. Boise State up from 12.5 to 13.5 here in this one. Brian, I'm real conflicted with this handicap because Boise State wants that New Year's Six bowl berth. They need to probably put some style points up in order to get there because they trail Cincinnati and Memphis. One of those two teams will lose this week. They need to put some style points up. At the same time, Colorado State is a play-on team for me going into next season. I think they're better than what their record indicates. They're not a bad team at all.
No, they're not. And we just spoke about a team not going bowling, and basically that's Colorado State. Colorado State has lost to some pretty good football teams. They did lose to Toledo at home. That one hurts them. But, you know, they've lost to some good teams, Air Force. Wyoming's been one of those teams that can find wins, San Diego State. So it's a situation to me that, that they've got something to play for here. But as you said, you know, you look over Boise State, the only loss they have all season long is a three-point loss at BYU in a game that they slightly outgained them. So Boise's been there all season long. You know, this will be their fourth road game in 6 weeks here. I think the line's pretty much where I would make it. So I'm not seeing a whole lot of advantage here, but you know, the Colorado State should be coming out. And if they could end this season by knocking off Boise State, I mean, that's a huge build for next year.
Yeah, it is. My line on this game is 11, so I'm a little bit below where the market is on this one. But again, my concern is Boise State has incentive to run it up if they get that opportunity. And keep that in mind here this week as well. Some teams do need some style points, whether it's for the college football playoff, like in Oklahoma, or just to, you know, try and get that that New Year's Six group of five bowl berth, like Boise State, who, you know, has to hope that probably Cincinnati wins this week or Cincinnati wins next week, then Boise State should be in that New Year's Six bowl game. One more college football game to talk about with you here, Brian, and this one's an altogether different type of handicap. I think this is a very hard game to read now. Game 389-390, UNLV and Nevada, and I think you're the perfect guy to talk about this game with. Tony Sanchez will not be retained as the UNLV head coach, but he's coaching the rivalry game. So how do you handle this situation?
Yeah, I thought it was – the timing of it tells me that they're looking towards the future. Obviously, Tony Sanchez, they said that he won't be back next year. They could have easily said this a week from now, and it wouldn't have had an effect. But if the kids from UNLV like Tony Sanchez, and everything I've heard is, you know, he's got a good relationship with the kids, just doesn't have the talent there. But they should give a really good effort here, because if he was going to be brought back and they came out and said that he's either going to be brought back or they don't know at this point, there's no extra motivation for the kids to play this game. But now they say that he's not coming back. I think UNLV could really come out and play a really good game. Now, obviously, Nevada's their big rival, so they were going to be up for the game anyway. But it just gives them some extra motivation here to send the coach out on a winning note with the line over seven. And it's interesting that the line hasn't moved after that announcement. It's been roughly 7.5 across the board ever since the line came out. You know, the team really, the last game they played was the final game at the Sam Boyd Stadium. And there was a lot of emotion there. So if they can end the season with two emotional wins here, winning the last game at their ballpark and then going on the road and winning the Fremont Cannon over Nevada, I think that's a big jump to what they could do for next year. But of course, Nevada hates UNLV, and it's really a one-way hatred, because you know, nothing against Reno. I love the city of Reno, but it's nothing like UNLV, and UNLV is like living in a palace compared to Reno. So Reno hates Nevada, UNLV a lot more than UNLV thinks of Reno. So the extra motivation is always there for the Wolfpack. But I think I'm kind of leaning with UNLV here. Don't know if I'll get there. I'm going to read a little bit more on it. But it wouldn't surprise me if this line goes down a little bit.
Well, and what's amazing here is Nevada's statistical profile is it's strange. It's one that I feel like I've never really seen before in college football. They've been outscored on the year by 126 points. They're 7-4. They're 4-3 in conference play, and they're minus 80 in point differential. Their four losses this year, 77-6 at Oregon, 54-3 at home against Hawaii, 36-10 at Utah State, 31-3 at Wyoming. Their wins are by 3, 6, 16 over UTEP, who's awful, 3 over San Jose State, 11, 4, and 7. So a bunch of close wins, a bunch of blowout losses. I mean, this is one of the crazier resumes I've seen for a team here, especially for a team that if they win this week and win a bowl game would go 9-4.
Yeah, it's amazing. I was looking at the Oakland, I think it was before last game, Oakland and Denver, there was a 3-game differential, even though they had the same negative point margin in their games. And that's something that you like to use when you're looking at season wins for the following year. But yeah, it's amazing how these games, you know, come down to a coin flip, and which way goes one way or the other could make you into a playoff team that you really don't deserve to be. And that could be the situation with Nevada, you know, if they get a bowl game.
Yeah, and I'll be curious to see what to do with that from a season win total standpoint next year, too, because, again, everyone's going to look at them for regression, but at the same time, their four losses just happen to be in blowout fashion, and three of them on the road. So Nevada will be an interesting talking point as we head on into 2020. And, again, not a bad time to start thinking about some of that, looking at, you know, the full body of work for some of these college football teams. Brian, we transition over to the NFL, and a couple of teams are very fresh in our minds here. San Francisco and Baltimore. What a bummer that this is a 1 o'clock game here next Sunday. Baltimore 5.5 or 6-point home favorite coming off the domination of the Rams, but the 49ers look pretty damn good themselves on Sunday night against Green Bay. Any idea what to do with this game on Sunday?
Yeah, this is funny because I was interested in the look ahead lines here. And it was 4.5 before both of these teams played. And then after San Francisco looked so good against Green Bay, I'm trying to think in my head. I said, okay, now what is this going to be? Then all of a sudden Baltimore comes out and just crushes last night. So I like both of these teams. My major concern here is the San Francisco run defense. They're allowing 4.7 yards a carry and on the season, and a lot of that has been lately. I mean, you take a look at what they've done, 5.4 against Arizona, 6.7 against Arizona the first time, 6.8 against Carolina, 5.7 against Cleveland. Teams with pretty good running attacks have been able to run all over the San Francisco defense, and as we have seen by Baltimore, I mean, 5.7 yards per carry is what they're averaging. And you go back their last six games, we're looking at 5.9, 7.3, 5.9, 5.1, 5.7, 6.3. And now they're playing a team that doesn't stop the run. From a power rating standpoint, obviously, I think there's value on San Francisco because my ratings are showing them to be probably 1.5, 2 less than Baltimore. But when you take a look at the situation from the matchup standpoint, I don't see how San Francisco is going to stop Baltimore here from that running game.
And of course, too, you've got the, excuse me, the early kickoff in Baltimore. You're coming off the Sunday night football game, big win. Monday is kind of useless, cross-country travel, all that type of thing. You know, I think that situationally it stacks up fairly tough for San Francisco. And again, from a matchup standpoint, from the X's and O's, sets up a little bit more difficult for San Francisco too. So we'll see what happens with the line movement for this one. But I think this one should be very, very interesting. Probably the best game on the card here for week 13. Speaking of storylines, game 471, 472, Cleveland and Pittsburgh. The rematch game after the Myles Garrett, Mason Rudolph thing. And the funny thing is, Garrett and Rudolph probably not going to play in this game at all. We haven't heard confirmation yet that Devlin Hodges will be the starter for Pittsburgh. That does seem like it's probably going to be the case. And in fact, Mike Tomlin doing a press conference as we're recording this here. So if anything breaks, I'll go ahead and add it to the segment. But Brian, the Browns haven't swept the Steelers in the regular season since 1988. Do they do it this weekend?
I'm very surprised by this line, at least where it is right now. I think the change of quarterback for Pittsburgh is a positive for the Steelers. They take more chances downfield. They're not nearly as conservative. And, you know, Cleveland last week was out without their best two pass rushers. And obviously we all know about their best player being suspended for the rest of the year. I'm surprised that Cleveland's a favorite here, to be honest with you. Cleveland's looked really good the last couple of weeks. You know, they beat that Pittsburgh game for 21-7, but they were plus four in turnovers. When you're plus four in turnovers, chances are you're going to have a pretty good game. Although we've seen some teams this year have these advantages and they just don't take advantage of them. But Pittsburgh, this game means, I think, from a recency standpoint, obviously Pittsburgh with the revenge, they're not used to losing to Cleveland. This is a team that they've dominated since back when I lived in Cleveland 20 years ago. So I just think there's some advantages here with Pittsburgh that are not showing up. And with the coach, with the quarterback change, Pittsburgh's got to be the way to go. But the problem is, Cleveland loses this game to Pittsburgh here. Basically, their season is over. They'll be, 5-7? They do have an easy schedule going down with Cincinnati twice and Arizona, but they do have to face Baltimore again. And we know Baltimore, hard to say, but Baltimore is in revenge against the Cleveland Browns for losing that game 40-25 earlier. But I like the changes Cleveland's made, but I think this is the week that Pittsburgh gets the victory.
Yeah, and you look at the Browns here. Last time they were favored in Pittsburgh, 1989, week one of 1989, that coming from Ralph Michaels, who you'll hear on tomorrow's show. But like I said, it's been over 30 years since the Browns have swept the regular season against Pittsburgh. So we'll see if they're able to do it here. We'll see if there's any sort of adjustment with Devlin Hodges officially announced. I don't know. I mean, a lot of people kind of making the case that, you know, the Browns kind of living up to expectations now, because early in the season, they played such a difficult schedule. Now, as you mentioned, that schedule gets even easier going forward, aside from that Baltimore game. And this is a playoff game for Cleveland, and it's kind of a playoff game for Pittsburgh too, but especially for Cleveland with how they started the year. So two very compelling 1 o'clock games here in the NFL, to be sure. Brian Leonard, professional handicapper over at wagertalk.com. What's going on over there right now, man?
Right now, we started to do a daily NBA podcast up on YouTube, and I've been taking part of that, and I'll be on that today. Ralph Michaels, that we mentioned, does a daily college basketball show each and every day, and you can pick that up, I believe. Get the link from the website over at Wager Talk, or go to YouTube and get it from there. But yeah, videos again today. We're moving it up a day early because of the holidays. So we'll be getting the videos out and hopefully get you some Thanksgiving winners. And hopefully for myself, get back on the winning trail here and pick some more winners here and get us back to where we've been all season long. Just had a tremendous year overall. But yeah, in a slump right now, and just got to grind our way through it.
Yeah, definitely hoping for the best for you, Brian. Hoping you get back on track there. And one last note, Devlin Hodges officially the starting quarterback for Sunday against the Cleveland Browns. Brian, always a treat, man. Thank you so much for joining me. Happy Thanksgiving to you and yours, my friend. And we'll talk to you again next week.
I do appreciate it. Same to you, sir.
There you go. There's Brian Leonard again, professional handicapper over at wagertalk.com. Coming up on our Wednesday edition of Bang the Book Radio, we'll chat with Ralph Michaels to start things off. Once again, from wagertalk.com, we'll talk some college football and some college basketball with him. And then we'll chat with Wes Reynolds, host on VSiN, about all the different stuff going on here as we head on in closer to the weekend. I am doing the segment Thursday morning with Brad Powers. So business as usual Thursday. We'll see what happens with the Friday show. Try to get on board with Brent from DSI, but we'll have my super contest segment on Friday as well. That'll do it for me. Thank you so much for listening, everybody. And I will talk to you again tomorrow.